Hello, welcome to Nerdy Paws. We're going to talk about some nerdy stuff, and we're going to talk about some furry stuff. I'm Barbershop Wolfie.
And I'm Flynn Roush. Welcome to episode number 5.
We've done 5 of these now. Well, we're doing the 5th one. That's weird.
Yeah, we can say that at the end, when we're closing. We'll say, we've done 5 of these.
So, what's our topic for tonight, Mr. Roush?
Today, we're going to talk about, or tonight, or... This particular time, whenever you're listening to this, we're going to talk about animal stereotypes in the fandom and also in kind of culture and mythology, sort of just talk about everything.
Yes.
Because we have all the time in the world.
Except when the bandwidth runs out on Ink Bunny.
Yes, we'll give you 20 megs of stereotypes about animals.
And then we have to cut it off.
Okay. So, because we were trolling around Ink Bunny asking for input, we've actually got a couple of people who messaged us with a couple of suggestions about things that we could talk about, which is wonderful. Do you want to go first?
Thank you guys so much for inputting to us. I don't know why I just made inputting a verb, but now that is a verb that I just invented. Thank you so much for offering input.
Well, you're an English major. You can make up words.
I can make up words, yes. Shakespeare did it, and so can I.
Exactly. You
so
want
to
start?
One, yeah, the first one that I have down is dogs and wolves and just canids in general.
Mm-hmm.
And who did we get that from?
Well, that was one we're going to talk about anyway, but we have a message from Dorky Wolf. Do you want me to read that?
Yeah.
Okay. So he says, what else am I going to talk about besides wolves? Lol. Wolves in the public eye tend to be seen as vicious creatures that attack defenseless animals and eat farmers' livestock. This isn't true at all. Wolves are defensive creatures that defend their pack and family and territory. They are just one of the most friendliest and accepting animals in the kingdom. They do not eat livestock just to eat it. In fact, the only time wolves attack livestock for food is when they see the animal is sick and dying. So technically, they save that animal the pain and us the disease. They are the most loyal of the canines. Wolf will mate for life. Once he has, once he's tied his female for the first time, they are together. He will forego any sexual activity with others in the pack, and even with her if she's not in heat. He will commit himself to her, and even after she dies, he will not be with another. I guess we'll go kind of paragraph by paragraph and just kind of talk about things.
I didn't know the thing about the wolves only attack livestock if, you know, they're sick or dying.
Well, I think that's more like... they kind of and most predators will do that. They'll kind of go for the easiest kill. Like I think for livestock, they'll just be opportunistic hunters. Like they'll go for hey, a field full of sheep. I'm hungry. The cubs are hungry. Nom.
I'll go for the slowest moving one that just
exactly.
Also happens to be the one that's sick.
Yeah. But that is pretty accurate. Now, wolves are, you know, very social and pack animals and all that kind of stuff, and they do have a very definite hierarchy. And the mating for life thing, as far as I'm aware, off the top of my head, I do believe that's the way it operates.
I'm not a wolf expert, and Dorky Wolf definitely seems to be way more well-read on this.
I know the alpha chooses who mates. I'm pretty sure it's not just him, though, because... I mean, hey, a guy has limits, right? So
I'm not a machine, dude.
Exactly. So I think it's like the alphas, and then he will like sort out who the betas are.
Alpha's like, hey, I get first picks, and then you guys can have the
exactly. Limits. It's like dodgeball at school.
that's a great way to describe it.
Totally. He goes on to say, in the fandom, I have seen several stereotypes, and we'll probably talk about these a little bit more. Wolf furries are very dominant/submissive. Not true on any side, and I have
well,
known plenty
it's
of people
true on mine.
That. Yeah. The wolf in us seeks for pleasure in any way possible, so we are all different, just like the wolf in a pack. You have the alpha and the beta. The alpha will never back down to his lessers and has control over them and their pecking order, but he will defend them with his life. The beta is his first mate, and will pick up the alpha's duties should the need arise, as well as have a domination over his lessers. Then you have the delta. I don't really know if they go further on down this dorky, and the Omega. Delta's just passive, going at the flow of commands, not really seeking out his dominance, but he knows he has it, and the Omega's completely submissive.
I'm an Omega.
Yeah. Now, in like wolf culture society thingy, the further on down you are, like usually younger wolves will be further on down, because like omegas will usually not go hunting. They'll kind of stay back and take care of the cubs because they're little. They're not as experienced yet, kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But now we all know how this translates to the fandom.
Oh my god, the fiction I have read.
Yeah, it's usually
usually like the pack culture gets framed into a very sexual context.
Well, yeah, like the wolf will just be like, if we're talking about like a piece of fiction, the wolf will be, you know, the object of everybody's. Well, no, everybody will be the object of his desire is probably a more accurate way to put it.
But he'll also love it, so it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. He'll be going around sticking it in everybody. to be quite vulgar about it.
I mean, vulgar is kind of what we do on this podcast. So.
True. So you have that kind of like the hard gay side.
The hard then, gay side?
Yeah, totally. You know, like the take. You know, it's all about self-pleasure kind of thing. And you have the submissive, the omega as well. And you see this a little bit less. You see this probably less in wolves with other wolves and more with, like, a wolf and another, like, bigger species. You know, like, if you have a bear and a wolf, then the wolf's probably going to be submissive.
Yeah.
But if you have, like, a wolf and an otter, the wolf is going to be the top kind of thing.
Yes, definitely. Because otters bottom for everybody.
They're so stretchy and slippery, of course they are.
And if two otters ever, you know, meet, then the world explodes.
Exactly. Yeah, they're going to be like, what do we do?
They're like, wait, due to new sciences, we have, you know, a double-ended dildo, so it's okay.
All right, trundling right along just to keep from getting derailed talking about otters and double-ended dildos. Skipping to the last paragraph. Wolf furries are the default. Everyone that has no idea how to create a persona has one.
I resent that.
Well, might as well say canines and felines are the default if you're going to say that. People adhere to a fursona for many reasons. Some people's reason may be because everyone is that species. Others may be because they like the look of them. His personal reasons, he says, are because of what the wolf symbolizes: loyalty, friendship, love, and intelligence. I admire the qualities of wolves and would like to adhere to those myself. And then he has a closing paragraph about warning everybody about stereotypes that you can't apply to everybody, and that belonging to a category you're talking... you can't apply to all people that have a belonging in the category that you're talking about. Not one person is the same in any way. Yet some people fulfill the stereotypes. That's where they come from. They got to be that way somehow. So yeah, wolf persona. Explain yourself on original one.
I think it was just, I don't know what it was, it just always felt right to me, and I never thought, like, for a while, it would, you know, I explained in the first podcast we ever did, like, sometimes I just sort of, like, flip back and forth, and, like, you know, going to some other ones, but, you know, like, I was a mouse for a while, I was, like, this weird...
Oh, you were a mouse?
Shut up.
Throwback.
Yeah, listen to the first one, and you'll understand what Flynn is talking about. And what was the other thing? I was this weird combination of dog for a while, and I was kind of married to that one. It was like this weird, like, for some reason, I got the idea from a picture that Fluke drew, and I was just sort of
yes.
And, like, you know how some of his dogs look. Like, I tried to my best to just sort of explain how that dog happened by, like, trying to just, like, so it's like, okay, this species plus this species equals that. And I think it was, like, my explanation was wolf and beagle. I don't know why I chose that. But that was my persona for a while. But then I was just like, why make it overly complicated with this really weird pairing that somehow made, you know, my non-existent fur parents? And I just sort of, you know, recently, within the past, like, you know, 6 or 7 months, reinvented my persona. I was just like, I just need to pick something that's kind of simple, but that I, you know, I just sort of like the way it looks. I like the way, you know, I like the species. And I think the reason that a lot of people choose canine personas, you know, other than just like wolves or dingoes or, you know, collies or anything, is just because Wolves. Dogs are the closest thing that men have to, like, you know, real interactions with quote unquote wild animals.
Absolutely. Well, man's best friend, right?
Exactly. And it's like we identify with that so much because we see so many of them. You know, I could look out my window right now, someone would probably be walking their dog.
Yeah, well, our social structure is very similar.
Right, that
you have
too.
You like it's a pyramid structure, right? You have the you know, strongest or the most meritorious at the top, or whoever's the best is at the top, and then you have a few of those, and then the next level you have a few more, and the next level you have a few more, and the next level you have a few more, and you know, shit rolls downhill. So it's, I guess it's probably kind of explains why when somebody finds the fan and they're like, yeah, I'm gonna be a wolf, because there's that whole feral side to it, but there's also a very relatable humanistic side as well.
Mm-hmm. With most dogs, really.
Yes. Yes, that's a good point. Okay.
So we want to move on to the next one that we have written down?
Yes, let's move on. Thank you for writing in, Dorky.
Thank you for writing in, Dorky. Our next one is cats. And who do we get this one from, Flynn?
Nick Too Shy gave us, I want to know more about cats and bunnies.
So
and
cats,
baby dragons.
So cats and bunnies.
Let's go with cats first. So we're gonna talk about, I guess, like kind of like all cats, like so house cats, but also
like lions, like and
lions
leopards
and tigers and jaguars and ocelots and servals and
oh my.
Yeah, and on and on. What are your thoughts?
I don't really know, because I don't see a whole lot of cat personas. Like, I'm not friends with many people who are cat personas, and I don't know if that's, like, by some sort of unconscious personal preference or just by circumstance, but I don't really know many people in the fandom who are cats on a, like, personal basis of any kind.
The only one I can think of off the top of my head that I've talked to recently would be Scotty Cat.
I have seen him in streams before, but I've never actually talked to him, like, outside of streams.
And I think Nick Too Shy may be a cat as well.
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is. Yay.
Wow, we dropped the ball.
Okay, so, well, let's, big cats are easier, so let's start there.
Big
so,
cats are big and, you know, strong. Obvious,
yeah, so we have lions. Lions are a very common, like, heraldry theme for royalty.
Yes.
Like, they carry a very strong connotation of, like, authority and ownership and regalness.
Yes, definitely.
And, you know, the whole king of the jungle, despite the fact that lions don't live in the jungle. They don't! They live in savannas, dammit! And you have tigers.
Jungles at all. Like, I never actually made that connection.
Yeah, like when, like the that song, "The Lion Sleeps Tonight." You know, in the jungle, the quiet jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. It's like, not unless he's really, really lost.
he drank too much and got lost and passed
exactly
out in the jungle.
Yeah, and then he'd have to look out for all the wolves that are going to top him. I went there. Clearly, we're getting an adult rating for this one.
Of course. We always get an adult rating.
So lions and tigers, kind of the same sort of thing. They're very, you know, they're big. They take up a lot of space. But, like, they're still kind of, like, I don't really know. A lot of the time, a lot of the art that I see them in, and people commission this, and they commission it a certain way, so I guess this may be leaning toward the stereotype. But they seem to usually be on the receiving end of everything.
Lions?
Well, more so tigers, actually. Lions, I honestly haven't seen a whole lot of. So you talk to me about lions.
Lions, I find this with a lot of large mammals, like even with bears, or most just like large mammals tend to have this connotation of power just because of their size.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because, you know, they're fat and then all of a sudden it becomes this like sexual objectification of like, ooh yeah, I like the chubby guys, or you know, I mean, granted, you can find that art out there and it is certainly out there, but even so, even if it's just like regular clean not sexual art of, you know, a lion and a bear, there's a sort of air of power and largeness to them. Not so much, I don't know. It's a lot of large, strong mammals like lions and bears. It's just I can't see them looking very vulnerable all the time just because of, you know, how powerful they are. Like, you know, you watch the Discovery Channel and it's like a bear paw is like the size of your fucking head.
But
like,
no, sometimes
they're huge. They will fuck you up.
Sometimes playing against the stereotype can be really interesting.
Yes, that too.
Like if you see like a piece of art where you have like a bear who's all trussed up and he's getting like totally dommed by a ferret or something, like that's like,
and it's always humorous.
What?
To...
Yeah.
Go ahead. But I've never seen anyone try to legitimately sell that while not being humorous.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Like it's always either embracing the stereotype or making fun of the stereotype, but it's never like actively going against the stereotype as a like as a character choice. And I have no doubt that it's out there and that I can't be the first person who's ever thought to, you know, to try that, but even so, I haven't seen it before.
Mm. Indeed. No, I guess I again, other than like playing it up for laughs, it's not really something that you see a whole lot of. But now, what about house cats?
House cats, there's a lot of variety with them. There really is, because it's like playing as a, you know, domestic breed of dog. There's so many to choose from, and there's so much characterization that can just evolve from just what breed you choose.
Well, and even then, it doesn't seem like people who choose house cat personas really choose a specific breed. Like, it seems that everybody's like an American Shorthair, and they just kind of go for it. Like, I haven't seen anybody like, yeah, like, I'm an Abyssinian, or I'm Siamese, or, you know, whatever. Or I'm a ragdoll. Like, I haven't really seen anybody really delineate their species that kind of way that dog sonas do.
Yeah, but from my experience, just like in everyday life, more people I know are dog people than cat people.
Well, and also, I guess, if you look at kind of the kind of pets we have, like, cats have a fairly universal temperament across all breeds. Like, some, yes, are more playful and some are more aloof than others, but, like, a cat is a cat. If a person were to act like, say, like one of my cats is a, oh shit, what are the really big ones? A Maine Coon. He's a bit of a Maine Coon and they're really clowny and he's like totally clowny, but he's still very much a cat. So if I saw a person acting like my cat, I'd be like, you are totally acting like a cat right now. But if somebody were acting like, I don't know, like stupid and lazy, like a big old St. Bernard, that's different from being, like, a super hyper-excited Jack Russell Terrier, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, how there seems to be a little bit more of, like, temperamental variety between them.
Yeah. Cats are a little bit more universal, and they're really underutilized. You don't see many house cat personas, which I think is a shame, because they are more versatile than I think the fandom would give them credit for.
Absolutely. Yeah, they do seem to be very underused, particularly in art.
Yes.
Like, except for Edis Crad, who was not active anymore.
Yeah.
I can't think of any artists that were drawing a whole lot of it, at least that I'm aware of.
Yeah. Let's move on to our next thing that I have down, which is foxes.
Oh, what about bunnies? Bunnies. We didn't talk about bunnies.
Oh, no, we didn't talk about bunnies. Crap. So, I am dropping the ball.
I don't really know any bunnies. Do you know any bunnies?
I don't know personally any bunnies. The one that comes to my mind is Inobi. He's on Ink Bunny. He was he's mainly on Fur Affinity, but he also has an Ink Bunny account that he posts on a regular basis, and it's just sort of like, you know, copy pasta from his Fur Affinity account.
Okay.
But he's a naughty artist. He draws lots of naughty bunnies, and he pretty much plays them up just like foxes, except it's a rabbit instead.
Well, culturally, if you look at it, like, rabbits are, like, there's even a turn of phrase, you know, if they're fucking like rabbits,
yeah,
or breeding like rabbits, you know, there's
there
even
really
that,
is, yeah.
There's that cultural slant toward excessive breeding and fertility, and actually they're even a bit of a fertility symbol.
They really are, yeah.
That's where the Easter Bunny came from. When
sorry,
like,
kids, Jesus isn't real.
When
it was actually a rabbit.
When Christianity was like converting Easter from a pagan fuckfest about like breeding and like rebirth and new life and fucking to like, you know, make the next generation of people, and instead making it a solemn holiday when you abstain from that, you know, you'd have kind of those like all these fertility symbols. So you would, you know, have sex in certain places and certain positions, and also, you know, worship these idols and iconography that had to do with that as well. And, you know, rabbits
worship the phallus,
worship that. And then we have kind of Hallmark pairing that with eggs, which are also a sign of like breeding and new life and regeneration and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, long story short, rabbits fuck a lot.
Yes.
That's why they have the ears. They have something to hold on to.
Their handlebars.
Exactly.
That was the best best laugh ever, just said.
Way to kill it with your freaking slurring. I'm slurring too.
I was about to say, like, you just slurred.
Shut up. Foxes.
Foxes. Sluts.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Gay sluts.
Yes.
There's a difference.
And again, culturally, there's a whole, like, there's a real milieu of everything with all this, because, you know, we can talk about a person as being foxy, and that doesn't mean slutty. That means like physically alluring, almost irresistibly so.
Yeah, like no one says it really anymore. Like, I can't remember this one time. Like, I can't think of a time if I was at a party and someone's like, "Hey man, that girl looks foxy." I'd be like, "Okay, if this was 1940, that might have seemed a little bit more not out of commonplace." But yeah, it is a phrase that's recognizable, you know, like, "Oh yeah, she looks foxy."
Is that a Jimi Hendrix song, "Foxy Lady"?
I wouldn't be surprised, but I'm not very well versed in Jimi Hendrix.
it's from that. Yes, it is Jimi Hendrix. I just Googled it real quick. But then culturally also we have in native kind of mythos, foxes as kind of like the trickster guide. Like, he teaches you a lesson, but you have to like endure like some kind of humiliation or degradation of status to come to this realization that ultimately kind of brings you back up there. You know what I mean?
It kind of reminds me of Rafiki from The Lion King. Like, he kind of teaches you a lesson by making an ass out of you.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, And it's not just
and it's never fully out of malice. It's always to help you, though.
Exactly. Like, it's they're tricksters, and they kind of want to get something out of it as well.
Usually sex.
Well, in the fandom, but even across, like, so we have North American native culture, but also in Japanese culture, we have kitsune, and they kind of also do the same kind of thing. Like, they're sly and crafty and mischievous, kind of like you have in both cultures, really. But also they, you know, they're very wise. Like, in Japanese culture, they have the kitsune, they have more tails the longer they live. I think they have a tail for every century that they're alive.
I don't know if it was every century, but I remember reading one time that, like, the more tails a kitsune has, that, like, the older they are.
Yeah, exactly. So the older, the wiser. So you have old wise creature, you know, guiding along us hopelessly stupid mortals. Yeah, but they're always seen as very intelligent, smart creatures. And then you have how they're often played in the fandom, at least from the gay side of things, is that they're...
Oh my god, the gay fox scene. is so huge.
Now, see, I haven't been seeing it as much as when I first joined found the fandom.
Oh, when I first found it, it was everywhere too, and we found it around the same time too. It's just there's a big age gap between us, so I was much younger.
Yeah, you weren't supposed to be looking at those things on the internet at that time.
Shh. Like, you.
Shh. Don't you even.
I'm 12 years old, and what is this?
I see what you did there, using your memes. completely derailed. So
yes,
so in the fandom, they tend to be bottomy little sluts.
They really are. What do we have next? We have raccoons next, which I don't know a whole bunch about. other than like they tend to take things and they
Knock
like
over your
shiny things.
garbage.
Huh?
Knock over your garbage.
Knock over your garbage and fall on your tent when your family goes camping. True story. There was a raccoon in my tent
Oh my
when I went
god,
camping.
that's amazing.
It
I
wasn't
would shit my pants.
It like was fighting with some other creature, I don't know what it was,
Oh god.
On my tent. I was too young to remember, apparently, but apparently it definitely happened. Because it's one of those things that always comes up at family dinners or something. It's like, oh my god, remember that time when we tried camping and we got like attacked by a raccoon? Like, we didn't get attacked, but it was like, you know, one of those things. It's like, yeah, remember that time that raccoon fell in our tent? That was fun.
Oh dear.
Oh my god.
Okay,
It's always a funny story to hear.
So raccoons, so they have their little like thieves mask on. And we're talking about raccoons, right?
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure we didn't change topics while I was like looking up things to help me talk about this.
No, yeah, we're still talking about raccoons.
Okay, good. Jesus Christ.
My god.
So yeah, so they're concealing their identity, you know, they're associated with kind of thievery, clever banditry, all that kind of thing. And mythologically, I'm not coming up with a whole lot.
I think their reputation just comes from like secular real life experiences. Like, oh yeah, those damn raccoons, they went through my garbage again.
Yes, and because of that kind of like possessive troublemaking nature, the only kind of immediately recognizable examples I can come up with are the ones that Game Popper actually posted up for us. The two he said were Sly Cooper from the Sly Cooper games.
Those
basically
games are awesome.
Basically a thief stealing treasures and you know other valuable MacGuffins. And the other one was Tom Nook from Animal Crossing, which I haven't played, but I do know the general story is that he well, like, you'll reach a certain point and he'll renovate your house for free in massive irony quotes, but then like come tell you how much you owe him for that. So you're like constantly paying him back. So there's that whole like kind of possessive idea,
yeah.
kind of thing. So culturally, but fandom wise, how much have you seen of raccoons?
Not a whole bunch. The only reoccurring raccoon character that I've ever seen, it's in some of Mizzyam, I guess that's how you would pronounce this person's name. They have an Ink Bunny page, Mizzyam,
mm-hmm.
Mizzyam, and they draw naughty art, so, you know, children, don't go there.
Children aren't listening, it's fine.
Yeah.
Oh, there's also Cotton Candy Coon as well.
I've heard that name. I don't think I've ever really seen much of their stuff.
Okay, I'll have to link you after.
Yeah, but Mizzyam definitely... she has a couple raccoon characters. One is Mitch and one is Melissa, I think. They're brother and sister.
And what's kind of their like is there naughty stuff? Like what kind of stereotypes, like fandom stereotypes, jump out at you from what you see?
Not a ton. Cause it's like if we're going from like, you know, a dominant submissive thing, you know, if we're gonna talk about the naughty porny stuff, Mitch both tops and bottoms. He does both, and he's never really exclusive or, like, you know, he never really prefers one over the other.
Mm-hmm.
He's neutral in a lot of ways. Like, the only thing that really sticks out about his personality is that sometimes he's just sort of, like, a practical joker.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't necessarily correlate with his raccooniness.
But that is kind of one of the traits that you would associate with a raccoon.
Not just with the raccoon, but yes, it does lend itself to the fact that he's a walking, talking raccoon person, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, we kind of all take attributes of the animals that we...
Yeah.
That represent us, you know, so like... Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's that like whole cleverness and troublemakingness.
This is one picture series where he definitely does the cleverness
mm-hmm.
thing. He sort of bamboozles the character into maybe giving him a blowjob.
Oh my. Well, there you
it's
go.
It's quite funny.
Free plug for Mizzyam. There you go. Oh, Jesus. Okay.
I really hope that that artist doesn't, you know, get angry that we...
No, there's no such thing as bad publicity. And besides, it's going to be posted up regardless.
Truth fact.
Okay, let's move on. Let's have a chat about dragons.
Yes, dragons. I don't see a lot of well, I have dragons slash scalies because just in general, scaled furry critters. I mean, which is kind of an oxymoron in a way because, you know, obviously scaled creatures don't have fur, so you don't.
Well, hence the different nomenclature.
Yes, it's I don't see a whole bunch of them. One of them that I'm a huge fan of that like. I sound like such a pervert. They only draw naughty art, mostly. Saravak is this person's name. He doesn't have an ink bunny. He just has a fur affinity. And usually, one word that he uses a lot is pesky for his characters. Which I think in some ways really sort of rings true with the whole dragon slash scaly stereotype of them sort of being these... He's sort of dominating, yet somehow weirdly seductive, a la Ka the Snake from Jungle Book, sort of critters.
Well, if you look kind of at the Western-style dragons, you know, yes, okay, they usually hoard gems and eat people and all that kind of stuff, but usually they tend to be very magically proficient in some way or another.
Yeah.
And mind control or some kind of like will subversion seems to be something that's not entirely uncommon among them.
Yeah, Saravak's art definitely features that a ton.
Yeah. in the fandom, dragons are hugely popular for Vor. just by virtue of the fact that they're the size of a, you know, house generally.
Like a house, yeah.
And nobody else is. Also, the you know, mind control war, or lots of other things.
We're venturing into so many weird places tonight, but I love it.
Havor's not that weird.
I mean, it kind of is.
I'll explain it to you. I'll explain it to you. It totally makes sense.
No, I get it. It's just like, it's weird because it can't exist in real life.
No,
without killing somebody.
That's part of what makes the fandom so amazing, is that you can, like... You can have this like ridiculous fandom or this ridiculous RP where you get to this point and you're like, well, I came, yeah, so did I, and you just go back to being like normal.
You go back to not being eaten.
Exactly, yeah. Or other things depending on what the RP is like. Yeah, it's interesting because again, not many dragons, maybe reflecting their real life rarity. But it seems that everybody goes, or most of the dragons that I have seen, rather, they go towards either that position of authority or control, either that and or like hoarding slash gluttony. Like, yes, I want all the treasures, or I want all the foods.
All your base, all the love of me.
Exactly.
Last one I have down here, because we kind of already addressed bears in a way. We were talking about cats, because I was just talking about large mammals in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the sake of time, we're kind of going to skip over bears, just because I already kind of addressed them when I was talking about large breed cats.
Mm-hmm.
Last thing that I have down that we haven't talked about yet is otters.
Yay!
And this shall be a very interesting discussion. Otters are the new foxes. The end.
No. Well, otters...
Yeah,
otters may be the new foxes, but huskies are the new otters. So, otters. I don't know any. I know of a few.
Huh?
Actually, you know, we were talking to Colson the other day. We know an otter.
We do know an otter.
Yay.
Yay, Colson, you're in our podcast. He probably won't listen, but if he does, hi, Colson.
This is two podcasts that he's been mentioned on, if not featured on. Maybe we'll have him in sometime.
That would be awesome. Anyway, otters. We do know one, so fun times.
I mentioned in the first podcast we were talking about Sonas and how we picked our own that for a while I thought I was one.
Aw, you were an otter?
But I have otter characters. I have like three now.
Yeah, you do.
I do. They're great. So culturally, I don't really know a whole lot about kind of what roles they fill. But if you go to like a zoo or some kind of wildlife enclosure, the kinds of things that you expect to see you know, playfulness, snuggly adorableness.
Generally being fucking adorable.
Oh my god, so adorable.
I was talking to one of my friends on the internet a few days ago, actually. He was talking about how he took his family to the zoo, and then I was like, how's the zoo? He's like, oh, you know, I was just sort of sitting around being with my family, wishing to God that I could buy an otter. And I was like, I wish I could buy an otter, too, because they're damn adorable.
So cute. I'm sure they're, like, buckets of trouble.
Oh, no, yeah, someone told me, well, no one told me. I was watching this, like, sort of YouTube channel. Where
it's called
person...
Otter Chaos, isn't it, with those two otters in the house?
I don't know, but I remember just watching a video, and someone was like, you don't want otters. They're like ferrets, but giant, and they're on crack.
That's why I want them. okay, so they're adorable. Fandom-wise, still tend toward the adorable.
Yeah, still tend toward the playful, adorable. And I'm just thinking of all the bad art I've seen. No, well, not bad. The bad, you know, adult content art that mm-hmm. I've seen of them. And I'm just like, this is the only thing that's coming to my mind.
Yeah, well,
and part
you know,
of it is because I'm purposely searching for it, but that's a whole different story.
Well, they tend to be bottomy.
Yeah,
they tend to also use their tails for nefarious things.
Yes, they do.
or delightful things, perhaps.
Depending on if you're into that.
But I have seen a few subversions. I've seen like kind of big, muscly ones as well.
I've seen those too. Like you know, usually artists who like draw. They usually draw, like, all muscle characters. I see muscly otters, and they don't look totally... They don't look totally out there.
Yeah.
At all. They look still relatively, like, they look like otters still, without looking as, like, oh, like, I slapped Arnold Schwarzenegger's chest under this otter.
Which is really a testament to their artistic prowess, really, because if you look at what an otter really looks like, they're very slinky and weaselly.
They really are. They're, like... big weasels or big ferrets. They really
are. Oh, they're so cute.
Oh my god, I want to buy one.
give me your wallet.
No one would let me have an otter.
No, I know. You'd always have to have your bathtub full so they could splash around. That'd be kind of annoying.
That would be so annoying cleaning up after that.
I know, they'd be like tracking wet footprints everywhere, and then as soon as you clean them up, they'd like go in again. But yeah, they tend to be, in terms of the fandom, they tend to be bottomy little whores. That that everybody just loves.
Of course. Including myself.
You are such a... Anyway. I'm not going to throw you under the bus there.
I think that's the end of our list, isn't it? Because I think we're getting to time as well.
I did have one other thing, but it was less species-wise, but it was another fandom stereotype.
I think I already know what it is saying.
Yeah, it's the Down Under furs.
Oh, no, I forgot about this one.
Oh, what was the one that you were going to say?
I thought you were going to say huskies.
Oh, shit. Oh, we don't have time for both, do we? Well, huskies, okay, fine. Huskies have curly tails that are always upturned, so they always take it. Usually from groups because they work in dog sled teams.
Oh, my God. The dog sled team art that I've seen.
Yeah, there's so much of it. Okay, so that's out of the way. So, so down under furs. So people who play... koalas / wallabies / kangaroos / dingoes / I don't know, whatever.
Any other Australian wildlife that doesn't, you know.
Box jellyfish? I don't know. Don't Google that. They're horrifying creatures. Please, oh shit, I just made everybody Google that. Damn it.
you didn't make me Google it yet, so.
Yeah, you will though, and you will not sleep tonight.
I have to go to work tomorrow.
You're gonna be tired. So it just seems that more so because there are animals that are very specific to that region, because you have, you know, we're just talking about otters. Otters inhabit a very broad region of the earth, kind of between, you know, certain latitude north and south all across the world. So you have North America, you have Europe, and you have, you know, Asia and Japan as well, and I think Australia also has them as well. So you just have like an otter, and really the only differentiation anybody makes is, oh, are you a sea otter or are you a river otter? Because there is a difference. But if you're like a dingo, well, dingoes are only from Australia. Kangaroos are only from Australia. So
you must talk with an Australian accent, right?
Exactly.
Except when they never usually do.
Except when they do, or except when they don't, rather. But if they do, like, it's either inconsistent or so consistent and authentic that it's absolutely unintelligible when you're reading their typing.
Oh, yeah. Like, when people try to phonetically, like, spell how their characters would like to talk, it's sort of like when you read Mark Twain's Huck Finn for the first time, and then you read Jim's dialogue, and you're like, Jesus. I don't know what this says. Everyone who's been through 11th grade in high school knows what I'm talking about.
In the U.S., anyway. We don't read that in Canada.
Oh, you don't read that in Canada?
No, we read, like, fucking Shakespeare.
Canadian literature.
Oh, God, and Wuthering Heights.
Oh, Wuthering Heights. I'm so sorry.
So bad. anyway, that one was more just like a little aside. That's not really a fandom stereotype, because you kind of assume that anybody from that region speaks with that accent.
Yeah.
Or if one of my good friends is from New Zealand and he has an accent that's sounds like it's from down in that region, but New Zealanders hate it when you say that you have an Australian accent because it's different. But yeah, it's just, you know, another one of those little stereotypes. It's just there because, you know, some people think it's true and some people prove it to be true.
We are at time, Flynn, and I have to stop you. I'm sorry.
I was about to say, like, we must be done by now.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for, first of all, writing in to everyone who wrote in and gave us input for this podcast. Thank you very much. And for everyone who keeps listening to us and keeps favoriting us and commenting, please keep doing that because we love it when you give us comments.
For a quick shout out, the people who wrote in were Nick Too Shy and Game Popper and Dorky Wolf.
Yes, thank you to all three of you because you're awesome.
Yay!
This is our fifth podcast. That's crazy.
Yay! We did it.
Yeah, this is Nerdy Pause, the podcast with no outro still. I'm Barbershop Wolfie.
And this is Flynn Roush.
Bye. See you guys next time.